get crazy. Now jump up, let's get crazy. Now jump up, let's get crazy. Hey,
let's get crazy.
Welcome to the Round 7 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus and I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey.
Good to be back, mate.
Well, good in a sense, but also awful in the sense that it was a very, very tough week of Supercoach. And I, after gloriously making it into the top 50 last week, which you were not around for, Mark.
I'm sorry I missed your glory, mate.
I've since crashed out after a torrid week. The good part is it seems like most people sort of struggled. So even if your score wasn't sort of up to scratch, just know that overall, that's sort of tended to be the case. Around the grounds, I didn't hit 2,000 mark, but that didn't seem the end of the world. I still stayed in the top 500. So this week, in terms of a rundown, we're going to focus a lot of our attention on rookies on the bubble. There's quite a few this week in the back line and potentially up forward as well. We're going to take a look at trade-in targets as well. So there's a bit of a focus on Hibbard, Heaney. Is Ablett a must-have now? There's a few tempting options available. There's been enough rounds played for players to drop in price if they've had a poor one. So there's some tempting options on the horizon. And just so happens Hibbert and Heaney return to sort of both be on the bubble pre-round seven. So I know those two are pricking up a lot of attention at the moment. Now, before we get into all that, Mark, let's start off with a personal update. How'd you go this week?
Do we have to do this?
Did you beat me? I'm not actually sure.
No. Like, I literally scored the lowest score that I'd basically seen around the grounds, and that was 1843. I guess everything just conspired to make it terrible. Yeah, like, I think the highest score in my midfield was Power Pepper. Good on you, mate.
Yeah.
A rookie, so... Yeah, look, a lot of things just went wrong, but that's fine. The main thing was I was about 580th, and now I'm outside the top 3,000. So it's going to be a long, long march back from here, which has put a bit of a dampener on the season. But hopefully win some leagues or something from here, and I'll just have to barrack for you, mate.
I think maybe it's exacerbated by the fact that we've had sort of hot starts, but I remember in round sort of 6, 7 last year or sort of in years past, we're sort of gritting our teeth to try and push back up into the top 1,000. So I feel like the rankings are still quite close and you're maybe not as far off as you potentially think. I scored 1906, which did look a little bit better, but not hugely
still
better.
Crap.
Yeah, still awful. So what can I say? Dangerfield captain, Rockliffe vice captain, like Selwood, Fife, Treloar, Beams, or like the top score out of 6 premium midfielders was 73 with Joel Selwood. Tom Mitchell was my only saving grace there. So just absolutely torrid. Probably
he had some like Fontempelli's out there scoring 140 and Ablett scoring 210.
Yeah.
Like a massive difference from week to week. But even Pendles like come back after the week before scoring 140 odd.
Yeah, I think anyone that had Bontempelli as a vice-captain because they played sort of first up, they really got a massive difference in sort of scoring just because they managed to put a captaincy on a 140 sort of point play, and that made a huge difference this week. So just goes to show you that there's still a lot of luck in this game, so don't feel too down and out if you're on the wrong side of that coin. Just remember how many trades you have left. Mark, 25 for you, I think, and 26 for myself. So we've still got plenty of time to determine our fates.
I don't want to wallow in my own self-pity too much. Did just want to mention that I traded Hoskin Elliott to Toby Green. And Hoskin Elliott scored 125. And Toby Green, what happened to him again? Hit the match winner, but got suspended.
Feel like you put the jinx on him a little bit there, mate. I wish you joined us for last week's show because I was definitely hot on keeping Hosky, and I'm glad he repaid the faith with a 125. But I know that must be a bit painful for you. So we'll move past it and try not to talk about it too much longer. We'll go to a group update quickly. The top score in our group was by Brendan. His team is Galler Morfrey Greats, and he scored 22.98 in an absolutely thumping week, and that would have done wonders for his rank. So well done to you, Brendan. In terms of the overall leader in our group, that's Kyle's Tyrannosaurus Tex, and he's ranked 22. So congratulations to both those guys for topping the group this week. In terms of our leagues, Mark, this will at least bring back a smile to your face. We have all of the top 10 leagues now. The league that I think was previously sitting 6th or 7th has since dropped to 11th. So that's massive news for us, Mark. And I've started counting down into the top 100 because the rest of sort of our leagues are also pushing their way up. And I counted 27 of the top 100 leagues, keeping in mind that, you know, we have something like 30 to 40 leagues total. So it's massive effort to all sort of be close up in that top 100. So well done to our community. Relative to everyone else, I think we're still pulling our weight as a community, Mark. So I'm trying not to be too down.
All of the top 10, that's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, we've run out of synonyms. Awesome, great, amazing. Never been done before, but yeah, it's a huge accomplishment. So well done to all of our community. Let's get into the show, Mark. Let's not spend any longer on the update after a poor week. We'll start off with injury and suspended players. So we've got both the key men on this week's run sheet. Less injury, more suspension flavored this week. So Adam Watts is asking, what to do with Toby Green if holding means copping a donut? So I think this first question is a little bit easier. If you're copping a donut, I would probably say trade. Then sort of a part B to that, Mark, is what would you do if you have Toby Green and you're not copping a donut? So...
Well, I think that even the first question, if you have Toby Green and you're copping a donut, try and trade someone else, like around a rookie or something like that, to try and avoid that donut would definitely be my first port of call. It's Toby, look, I mean, he looks like he's in awesome form. You picked him for a reason, and if you could keep him, that'd probably be your best bet. And so I guess worst case scenario, I'd probably, if you can bring in someone awesome like Pendlebury or something, I might trade him. But 2 weeks is not long enough out to be trading normally.
Kind of the issue of side-swapping premiums or injured or suspended players at the moment is that we're into upgrade-downgrade cycle, Mark. It's been, four price movements now since Supercoach kicked off. That's enough time to start cashing in on rookies. I mean, we heard Parfitt go down. Here's a prime example. And we'll talk about the other rookies that are sort of available for picking. But basically, you should not really be short of two rookies that sort of trade out and sort of hit an upgrade target at this stage in the season. So by side-swapping a player like Green or Nankervis, even though you do get the points back that you would otherwise lose for potentially having a donut or a rookie on field, you need to consider that you basically put yourself half a week behind everyone else. You won't be able to side swap and upgrade, so you'll have to side swap and downgrade, and therefore you'll be one premium behind everyone who's sort of hitting their stride. So if it's something that you can deal with by putting rookies on field, even if it means sort of dropping like a rock rankings-wise or losing some league games, I think sort of that short-term pain is worth the long-term gain there. So, Mark, I have a feeling that I will be out of the top 1,000 club with yourself for the next couple of weeks as well.
What about the other one, Nankervis? That's not great timing with Green going down as well.
Mm-hmm. So Harry Chen's asking about whether or not to cop a donut for Nankervis if he's in the rucks. So I want to start off by assuming you have Nankervis in the rucks, because that's probably the hardest situation to deal with. And then we'll talk about what to do with him in your forward line. I'm assuming if you have both Green and Nankervis, you're definitely keeping sort of Nankervis over Green. So there's sort of no need to delve into that situation too much. But Nankervis in the rucks, what do you do?
I guess you try and bring him forward. Like, he seems like a player that you want to keep in your team. I mean he's never done a whole season as a ruckman before. He's still young, but given his form, I think that he's a player that you don't want to be getting rid of. So I guess you try and move him forward rather than upgrade him. And the other thing is that it's really not clear who you would upgrade to, with rucks being so really up in the air or inconsistent so far this year.
So the top three rucks in terms of average goes Mumford at 111 with a notorious injury history. Steph Martin, 109 with a similarly torrid injury history, but at least has shown some exceptional scoring in the past. Toby Nankervis, of course, 105, who's the guy that we're talking about. And then Grundy, who we've been talking up sort of early on in the season, has
come. And then Cox has come back.
He's kind of fallen away, 71 and 83. So his average has dropped down to 98. So I do agree that I would look to bring in a ruck instead of sideswapping Dan Kervis, because it really does feel like a sideswap, potentially even a downgrade depending on who you hit with that sideswap. But in terms of bringing in that replacement ruckman for this week so you don't cop a donut in the rucks, like, who do you pick? Mumford, Martin, or Grundy? Or is it someone completely different? We had a question also about Ben McAvoy, because he's had a hot run of form in the last 3 weeks.
I think it's pretty hard to touch Ben McAvoy. I know he did. He had a premium season at St Kilda many years ago. Maybe he plays better for teams that aren't doing so well. Jacobs, I think, is another person that is pretty durable and has only averaged 91, but has shown a fair bit of form in the last couple of weeks. Looked pretty good. So, yeah, it's really, really up in the air. I guess based on scoring at the moment, I think you have to go Martin. Mumford looked great, but even on the weekend, he rolled his ankle. Like, he's either always injured or always has carrying some sort of niggle. I don't know how he keeps going.
Well, Martin's at 557, Grundy's at 513, McAvoy at 450, and Jacobs 480. I mean, that might sort of play into who you're actually able to pick up. I would say if you are able to, try and reach for the stars and pick Martin, because I'd say Martin's the bloke that I'm most confident about sort of actually ending up in the top two rucks. And even though he's an injury risk, still does stand a decent chance of trying to play out that season. Whereas Mumford, you're going to need a trade for him. Grundy, if he's only, 30K, 40K less than Martin, would you go for the more bona fide option? And then if you're really stuck for cash, I would pick Jacobs over McAvoy. I think Jacobs should be somewhat advantaged by the fact that they stopped the third man up and he's a more traditional tap ruckman. So that should mean more hit out to advantages. And, they got Matt Crouch, Brad Crouch improving. They got Sloan. They got decent sort of feeders at the ball as well for those hit out to advantage points. He's definitely not as high a scorer since Dangerfield has left the team, though, Sammy Jacobs.
Yeah, and I guess the other thing you need to factor in, which is really, really tricky, is that Grundy and Martin both have really high break evens given their games on the weekend. So that means they're going to get a lot cheaper, but you have to pick them this week, which is not ideal.
I mean, maybe the other alternative is if a rookie potentially gets named in the ruck this week, if Mitch King maybe, and Melbourne gets named, although I doubt it because Pettersson did all right on the weekend. Yeah. But, if one of those rookie ruckmen does come up, I'd be tempted to sort of just slip them in for the 1 week.
Yeah, there's not many good solutions here, though, is there?
No. So I think you kind of just have to pick the best of a bad situation and pick the player you're most comfortable with. But I think we've probably given you enough to make that decision. So we'll move on to what you do if you have Nan Kervis in the forward line. For me, this is quite a no-brainer. You probably just hold. We talked about Green being out for two and you're still likely to hold. Like, if you had Nan Kervis, surely you hold for just the one.
Yeah, it's painful having both of them because that's forcing me to trade someone into my forward line, which I might not have been wanting to do at this stage, and it's probably going to stop me from getting an upgrade in this week.
All right, we'll move on to the rookies now, Mark. So we're going to cover the outs and the ins in this section because I think it probably makes a little bit more sense now that we're up to the upgrade-downgrade cycle, Mark. So the first question here is from David Siddles. Thanks for all the advice this year, guys. Currently ranked 871st overall and never been this high before. So you're welcome, David. Hope you keep that up. Best rookies to cash out this week, those what he's actually looking for. Listed a few options. You can add to it or just pick them apart. So you got Otten, Houston, Butler, McGrath, Hampton, Parfitt, Marchbank, Bowers, the guys that I have down. I think Parfitt's sort of the most slam dunk out of that because he's out for 8 to 11 weeks with a hamstring off the bone. And then my second after that is actually Bowers. I know that he potentially has a little bit more upside in him because he's only at 244K, but he plays for Gold Coast, which doesn't instill a lot of confidence in me. He's shown an average of only 52 so far. His best game's been a 74, so I question his ability to get 100, and that kind of really helps spike a rookie's price. Even sort of if they can't keep up 100, at least that one really big game can tend to sort of carry the load for a three-week price cycle. So Bowers is probably the next one for me that I'd be looking at. Mark, your thoughts?
Yeah, Parfitt and Bowes are right up there to go. I'll probably be keeping Bowes at this stage. Houston and Butler would definitely be on the next line for me, both at about 280,000 with their break-evens creeping up and probably look unlikely to really spike that average up again. So those guys have done their job and they're probably ready to go. And so that's really a lot of forward or forward mid rookies to trade out. Up back, I think that Marchbanks seems reliable as a on-field scorer, a bit more than Hampton. So I'd probably be tempted to get rid of Hampton first. I know that he's got a break even of about 30, but it's getting close to the time where you'd get him out, like either this week or next. And Otten, you can do Otten to Hibbard for like 40,000, which seems like a good trade. Like I personally am probably going to have to keep Otten for a while because I have other priorities, but yeah, I could see him see scoring potentially dropping off a little bit. And the surprise of the season really has been Andrew McGrath. He's cost over 200,000, but he's played so well the last couple of weeks, he's turned into a pretty good pick.
Absolutely. I think he started round one off with a bang and then sort of quietened down a bit. And that quietening down process sort of ruled him out at that price point. But if we knew he was going to keep this sort of scoring up, should have snapped him into our teams, Mark. But never mind. I think I like sort of Hampton being the pick out of Hampton, Marchbank and Otten to go out. There's reason for trading Otten out as well. But Otten I see as potentially even being able to hit like 450. I mean, he is at 370k now. If he has another run where he scores 90, like 108, 98, 98, 101 in a row, like his price will get to 450. So
I just worry a little bit with Jenkins back that Otten's not going to be playing that second ruck role. So he might struggle to hit those higher scores consistently now.
Definitely at risk there. But I still think overall his super coach play seems to be a little bit more consistent than Hampton, at least, who seems to swing a little bit more.
For sure.
Hampton probably has the same upward scoring potential as Otten moving forward if Jenkins is back in the team, but in the sense that his propensity to score in the 40s or 50s worries me a bit, because if you are unable to hold, you know, a 90 average for three rounds, it is sort of hard to break past the 350 barrier, which means that Hampton potentially only has another 50k in him unless he has a really hot streak. So I like that. We'll move on to the actual trade-ins now, Mark. This first question is from William Patrick. He's just asking who the must-have rookie options are this week. Jester 5 is asking us to compare Melican, Edvicus Willis, and McNeese, who are all in the bubble in the back line, which is a bit frustrating. And then we've got questions about Black and Parsons up forward, both Geelong forwards. And then we've had a few cheeky ones about Myers and going early on him. But to be honest, like with sort of five rookies on the bubble, I don't think we should be doing that.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. Like, it's easy to want to take one of these rookies really early, like David Myers, because there's high expectations on what he's going to be able to do, but then you're going to need a downgrade in a couple of weeks, like whether it's Powell Pepper or whoever it is in the midfield, so he's going to be a really handy inclusion then, so I'd probably just wait till then, unless you predict that he's going to score 100 for you on field, I guess. That's the only other way you'd do that. Out of the backline rookies, I think that EVW stands out for me, Vickers Willis, just because he was a preseason interest as well. Had a couple of years in the system, you'd think he'd probably get games at North. I know the fact that they won on the weekend probably goes in his favour, and Aaron Mullett being out as well, out of that defensive lineup, probably works to his advantage as well. So not a massive scorer, but he is the one for me. Also has a decent buy. McNeese has been okay, but wasn't great that Melbourne scored so many goals so easily on the weekend from inside that 30-metre area. So that's how it goes in defence. And interested to hear your thoughts on the Black versus Parsons issues, mate, because if they're both named, there's some chance I'd end up taking both of those guys.
Yeah, and I think that seems to be the question. Like, do we grab both? Not sort of who do we grab if only one's available? Because I think a lot of people are potentially looking at Black and Parsons as both more attractive than the three backline rookie options, and also that the forward line rookies are more ripe in terms of Houston, Butler, Parfitt, Bowes. So there's more people looking at potentially bringing those two in. I do think it's kind of one or the other type scenario with Black and Parsons. They actually both, in my opinion, play the same sort of medium forward, third tall forward role in Geelong. So I don't really see them both fitting back into the team together, and the fact that they haven't sort of played games together I think kind of points to that. So Black came in for the two games that Parsons has been suspended. I think it's anyone's guess. Like, I'm not really sure who's going to get the game out of the two of them. I would assume that Parsons comes back in and Black goes out, because Geelong tends to like playing a squad, and Parsons sort of did enough in his last game before being suspended to warrant an inclusion back into the side once he's available, and Black didn't necessarily do enough while he was in the team to demand staying selected. So that would be my guess as Parsons ins this week. I'd be worried about both sort of in terms of job security moving forward, because one will sort of steal from the other, and sort of leading up to the buys, you kind of want rookies that are going to play fairly consistently. You don't really want poor job security rookies. So
you wouldn't, even if they're both named, you wouldn't take both of them?
Yeah, if they both were named, I'd take Black. I wouldn't take Parsons, because long-term I'd be more confident that Black would get games than Parsons. And Parsons has looked all right, but he's looked all right in patches, and his second game was better than the first, but then he got suspended. He's probably the smaller of the two, less of an established sort of marking forward. To me, he's more under threat from sort of, you know, we've got quite a lot of small forwards that I think aren't getting games at the moment. So those small forwards are more likely to take Parsons spots than Black, who has sort of more of a defined role. Like, he was brought in as a backup forward, and with Taylor spending more and more time down back, I'd say that Black has more and more chance of making it up forward in our side.
Interesting. And yeah, I think that Parsons just seems like that sort of player. He's not quite there yet, even though he had a decent game, and that he is unlikely to really play out the rest of the season, I would have thought.
Having said that, though, I really wouldn't be too concerned about both being named. So we'll just see how the game plays out. All right, we'll move on to the outs this week. We did get questions again about Ruffhead, O'Meara, and Swallow, but I really do feel like we've spent almost 3 weeks on this, especially while the topics were lied on.
I'll do them quickly. Ruffhead, gone. O'Meara, gone. Swallow, maybe hold him for the next 2 weeks and see what happens.
All right, we'll move on to the next question. This one's from at CarltonJers87 or Braveheart on Twitter. Is it time to upgrade Beams? He seems unlikely to hit a 114 break even this week, or even average sort of premium numbers, which in the midfield you'd kind of want 110 plus. So we kind of took it for a given that Beams would get back to that level of elite scoring. Like, he's capable of 125 plus, which we've seen before, but he's struggling a little bit. Keep in mind that before last week, his lowest score was a 90. So, but last week, sort of his 66 has dragged down his mean to under 100 at 96. I feel like it's a bit too early to be pulling the trigger, but your thoughts, Mark?
91, 120, 109, 90, and 100. So before the weekend, I would have thought, gee, that's going pretty well for what you paid him. I mean, he's not doing sort of Mark Murphy completely off the chart sort of numbers, but that's really good. And then he puts in a 66, which we've seen from almost all of the other midfield premiums at the moment. So, yeah, I'm not too concerned by Beams. Like, if he gets injured, I'd trade him out. But surely you've got a lot of other priorities going on in your team. Look, I think that the reason why he's coming up this week is that people are looking for a way to get, like, a Bontempelli or Pendles into their team, and seeing Beams as a stepping stone. I think that Beams, if he does get his shit together after a while out of the game, he could sort of burn you a little bit if he gets to that 110, 115 mark, and that would be pretty painful.
To the trade-in candidates now, we've got a lot of heat on this first player this week. Shane Medcalf is asking about Michael Hibbard. Is he a contender for the top six scorers in the back line after scoring well against Richmond and Essendon? So Hibbard, most temptingly, is priced at 402,000 after missing last year. I did talk him up sort of in that first preseason show ages ago before it looked like he wasn't going to get back for round one, but he's come back and scored 124 and 90. On the one hand, he is averaging 107. On the other hand, that's very much within the range of his score. So I'm not sure how much that speaks to breaking out to a top six defender. I am concerned about the preseason that he has had. So I am nervous, more nervous than most, it seems. How about yourself, mate? Are you nervous or are you gung-ho?
I went to the Richmond-Melbourne Anzac Day game, and I was sitting up at the top of the southern stand, and I'm like, who the hell is this number 14? He's a bloody good player. And then I'm like, oh, bloody Michael Hibbert, the bastard. He's kicking butt. And Melbourne just looked brilliant with him coming off the left, and Jaden Hunt, who is an absolute star, coming off the right. Hibbert looks like he's been playing kind of like Heath Shaw, like doing all the kick-ins, playing on, taking some contested marks. Like, he looks really, really good. The problem is that he's never actually really averaged full premium numbers before. I think he pulled like one really good season together at the Bombers. His preseason is definitely a concern. Like, he missed a bunch of weeks with an Achilles. That's the injury that often lingers quite a lot, and players don't fully recover for quite a while. So, yeah, I think that there's some genuine concerns there, but I can understand why people want to bring him in. He's 400,000, which means that you're lowering the risk, and he has looked absolutely brilliant. So, yeah, I'm definitely not bringing him in this week just because I've got a whole bunch of other crap to deal with. But look, I can see why people are wanting to do it. There's some chance that his ceiling is capped a little bit and you might get stuck with someone averaging more 90 than 95, but I think at his price, he's probably worth the risk.
If I had to guess what Hibbard would average this year, it'd definitely be closer to 95 than 90. I would say 95, but I agree in the sense that, yeah, I don't think he's a 100 averaging scorer. I think all the points that you brought up was valid. The one thing that I do want to sort of underline is that Hibbard comes with an inherent injury risk. I've been quite a big fan of picking Hibbard in seasons past, Mark. I think even more than yourself as a, you know, Essendon supporter when Hibbard was still playing for you. And based on what I've seen from him, like, I love his scoring, but just his ability to stay on the park, that sucks. Soft tissue injuries are a thing. Having started the year off an Achilles interrupted season, you just got to acknowledge that he's fairly priced, in my opinion. I think of him as a 450k defender, 470k, but his injury risk probably counts for about 50k. So I think he's a good buy this week if you're looking at a cheaper back line option, but I don't think he's a must-have. Yeah. I don't think he's a top six defender, but he's not a bad selection by any means. It's just like, this is the week to buy him if you didn't want him.
Yeah, okay, I think we agree a fair bit on that then.
All right, next question is by Chris Connors. He's asking about a comparison between Hibbert and Heaney. They're probably the two main candidates in terms of tempting trading options available. Heaney, obviously one of the locks in the preseason prior to going down with glandular fever. 433,000, his price tag, 75 in his first week back, and then 107 really sort of underscoring his potential upside there on the weekend. And that was in a loss too, Mark. So thoughts on sort of Heaney? I know I've seen a few of your posts around the forums. I think you're potentially quite tempted by him.
I think I'm probably out of step on this one. I don't think that this decision's even really close. I think Heaney's way ahead of Hibbert, and that is really because I think Heaney could easily compete to make the top six forwards. And I think that the fact that he had glandular fever, like, he was having a decent preseason before that, and then glandular fever hits. That's not like a soft tissue injury. It's a completely different scenario. So he should be right to go now. I guess the concern is Sydney and how they're going to go from now on. But he, like, was playing as a genuine midfielder on the weekend, and his marking and presence around the ground was awesome. And so I was very, very impressed by what I saw. And even though he scored less than Hibbard in the first 2 weeks, yeah, I'm very keen on Heaney, to be honest. I'm not convinced I'm going to be able to find a way to bring him in this week, but definitely very keen.
What are you talking about, Mark? You got two outs in the forward line. You like Heaney, 433k forward line replacement. Sounds like you're priced in there, mate.
The problem is that it's Heaney versus Pendles for me, and I am pretty keen on having Pendles in my team, so look, I'll think about it as the week goes, and it depends a little bit on selections as well. With Parsons and Black, if they both come up, I might take two of them, and Heaney's break-even suggests that you could probably wait a week if you needed to.
My struggle with Heaney, and I think the struggle's probably a little bit different to Hibbert, is the sense that Heaney's not really proved himself as a proven premium before. Even though I haven't seen Hibbert maybe do that to the extent that I'd like, I've seen it enough in patches that I'm confident that as long as he stays injury-free, he's pretty damn close enough to it. Heaney, on the other hand, like, I mean, I understand that the forward line competition isn't quite as high, but yeah, the bloke hasn't really averaged premium numbers before. So off a limited preseason, he does seem to carry a bit of risk. What I'm really sort of conscious of is, like, am I overvaluing Heaney, or is his prospects being somewhat inflated because all the other options look poor? And that might be a legitimate reason to pick Heaney, but it might also be a legitimate warning sign that, like, hey, like, if this bloke costs you 400,000, he's had a limited preseason, and then in a team that's so far gone 0-6, he could very legitimately average 85 for the season and be a complete dud pick. So I'm just a little bit worried about that. And his buy is in round 11. So to make it potentially easier to take a risk on him if he was a round 12 or round 13 play, to side swap around the buys to mitigate some of that risk. I tend to like starting with these sort of players, but I'm normally quite hesitant about trading them in. Having said that, I think Heaney, potentially, like, if you're going for the 50K, right, like, Heaney's a good selection. If you're just trying to win leagues and do the consistent thing, I'd probably stay clear. That's kind of how I view it.
Nah, wrong.
Mate, you've kind of got to pick Heaney now, you know, just to shove it in my face.
Nah, because I get to do that even if do well anyway. And if I do pick him and he sucks, then God, I don't want to have to deal with that.
All right, we'll move on to the next question. Two different points of view there, so I'm not sure we're going to really resolve that one. Shannon Swan's asking whether or not Gary Ablett is back. Ablett scored a massive 210 and showed us why you just cannot forget the former son of God that is Gary Ablett. The reason I do want to talk about him is, even though there's, you know, whispers about him sort of ending up as a top eight midfielder, you know, with this 210 and upward scoring potential, you know, the question that's also come up alongside that is, could we just sort of piggyback off the 210 and maybe get, you know, a couple of sick price rises and then trade him back out?
Lots of good questions there, mate. Look, I think that, I guess if you're going to bring him in, this is the week to do it. It'd be nice to wait till after his bye, but he's going to be worth a lot of money by then if he just posts two decent scores over the next 2 weeks. I think that I haven't seen enough from Gary Ablett before this week, this season. I know that he's probably had, his dream team's been really good and he's had a lot of the ball, but it's been a lot of cheap ball and he hasn't really been hitting targets, and he maybe just had like one out-of-the-box game against North. I guess the counter argument is that he hasn't been confident in his body and he's finally feeling good and he can continue that going forward. So I guess the lesson is, never underestimate Gary Ablett, because he is the greatest Supercoach player of all time. I think he will be a top eight mid, but it's more likely than not that he probably can't keep it going for the whole year or doesn't stay fit for the whole year, based on what we've seen recently. And I think the idea of bringing him in as a stepping stone is probably just not going to happen, just because of when his bye round is. I think if you bring him in, other stuff's going to come up. I don't see him as a moneymaker, no.
Overall, I do think that even though he looks like a good trading option because his average has now been inflated, if you look at his next best score, it's 114. Realistically, to maintain a 115 plus average, you need to be scoring in the 140s quite regularly, because everyone has a poor game. Everyone scores 70 occasionally, and Gary Ablett probably a little bit earlier than most in round two, and that copped a lot of criticism. But overall, like, he still hasn't had enough massive games to instill a whole lot of confidence. So even though he looks good, I would probably pass. And next question is from David. Should we do anything to get Sloan and Bontempelli in? So I didn't want to cover these two off just because they are absolutely killing it. Sloan's averaging 132, which is Gary Ablett-esque, and Bontempelli at 122. Bontempelli and Sloan have both had their poor games in 88 and 77, so it's not like they were being completely devoid of down performances, but they've completely made up for it by sort of scoring 130 plus when they have been on field. Do you see either of these two as must-haves? Because, I mean, at their price point, 675 and 600,000, they kind of need to be must-haves and maintaining this sort of average in order to be warranted trading in.
I don't think that Bont has to be a must-have at 600,000. There's still a bit of value there. And he looks like he's an absolute superstar, and he looks very easily capable of a 120 average over the course of the season. He has been known to have down patches throughout the course of the season, but as someone that has not owned him much in the last couple of years, it's very painful to watch him, because he just always seems to get that decent score. I think he's a really good selection at about 600,000. There's just no way that you can pay 670 for Sloan, though. I think that given his injury history and the fact that we've seen him go on runs like this before, and then, like, as soon as people bring him in, he gets injured again. Look, this might be the time that he doesn't, and I honestly really hope it isn't, because he is going to have an awesome season if he can just keep going all year, and I'd love to see that. But based on what's happened with him in the past, the failure rate is really, really high.
Sometimes not picking a player is a competitive difference. If somebody's paid 670 for Sloan and then he then proceeds to get injured or have a poor game, that's going to derail that trade. By not trading, you know, one of these two players in, it can be a strategy in itself. So I don't mind not picking either of these two players. I wouldn't be moving heaven and earth to get them in. All right, we'll move on to the next question here. This one's from Joel. We're moving to the forward line now. Thoughts on Elliot Yeo. Elliot had an absolutely shit week last week, scored 59 after scoring 141 in round four. And we all thought, geez, maybe he's not able to keep up this level of consistency, Mark, and it will drop back down. And then, boom, 150, a massive game. His averages are 112. If he keeps this sort of scoring up, he is an absolute must-have in the forward line. Question is, can Yeo do that? He hasn't shown that in the past, but he's young and there's no reason why he can't keep improving. Thoughts on Yeo? I mean, this is kind of a good week to bring him in. His break-even's 91.
Yeah. Look, I've got no fucking idea, mate. I seriously don't. Like,
yeah.
He has been such a yo-yo in the last couple of years with his scoring and just had such terrible periods and such amazing periods. And I don't have a clue. A total gamble there. I just close my eyes and click buttons.
I was choosing between Yeo, Lynch, and Green a few rounds back, and I chose Green. Turned out to be a mistake, but that's Supercoach.
No, but last week, like a week ago, you're like, I'm a fucking genius. I just avoided a massive issue. This is brilliant. It's turned around.
1 week later, I'm like, oh, Elliot, yeah. Personally, I would like to think that West Coast look like they have a decent shot at the eight. And so if Yeo is sort of in that fourth, fifth, sixth mark with West Coast, like, could this be the year that he steps out? Like, why not? Like, he's playing in the back line this year as opposed to the forward line in the last few years. Can he stay there all year? That is a legitimate and good question. Jeremy McGovern, like, where's he going to play? Is he going to spend a bit more time up forward, or will he be down back stealing intercept marks off Elliot Yeo? Last week, they both scored 140 plus. I don't know. I just see his upside is so high that like at 510,000, he doesn't seem overly expensive. I'd be tempted to buy in at that price mark. And then like, I don't see him falling much further below the top six forward average. So to me, it's like low downside, high upside. Like the most you lose out on is 40K value.
I disagree with that. Like he averaged like 75 last season. I think that he's one player that has really low downside and really high side.
That would make the equation a lot more difficult, I suppose, which is why that's the difference in opinion between the two of us.
Yeah.
I really
wouldn't say that he is a low risk pick.
In the sense that his position might sort of switch up, but would you agree that if he stays in the back line at least, that he's lower risk?
Yeah, but like we haven't seen that happen in the last few years, and we've seen him be switched around and be a role player, and I think we've already seen a little bit of that this year. So I just think that his role is not guaranteed and that he's the sort of player that could make or completely ruin your season or your weekend. I want to go back to my original point that I honestly have no idea what he's going to do. Like, I want to make that really clear, but I just think that like he played a fair few games last year and he only averaged 75 and he's never averaged like above 90 before. And he has shown in small periods that he can do this. So massive red flags as well as massive green flags.
So we'll move on to the last question for the week. Shannon Swan is asking whether Wingard's move into the midfield makes him a top six forward option. So with Green and Nank out, I thought maybe let's cover one more forward premium. This is a bloke that has managed premium scoring in the past in the forward line or close enough to be a premium this year. Do you think he might get more midfield time in 2017? I know there's talk Boke will come back this week, but in the article in the afl.com.au at the moment, Wingard was there saying, well, that means that I'll only be 50-50 instead of predominantly midfield. But it does sound like he's still spending a fair bit more time in the midfield this year than in previous years. Is that enough to rocket him up there?
And I think that like Robbie Gray's gone forward a lot more, so that probably creates some space for him in there. Yeah, realistically it does, because he has averaged over 97 twice, and they've both been years where he's played 22 games, hasn't done it for a couple of years, and has had those, like, I know that you've had him in your team at different points, and if he doesn't get it right, it's a bit of a frustrating play because he sort of stalls a little bit. But Porter playing well, I think he plays well when Porter playing well, or maybe the other way around. If he averages 95 to 100, that's probably a really good result in the forward line. So yeah, I guess he is someone that you should have in consideration.
Just keep in mind, in his second year he played 22 games and averaged 98. At this current price point, it does seem like if you're looking for a forward target, he might be worthwhile a punt. Rounds 2, 3, and 4, 83, 73, 58, so price trending down. Last two rounds, 101, 127, price trending right back up. This is kind of the week to buy him. His break-even's 27 if you want him. And notably, he's in under 10,000 teams, so he is a unique point of difference.
Port have played Carlton and Brisbane in the last 2 weeks, though, haven't they?
Yes, so does carry some risk, but we talk about taking some risk in the forward line anyway. So it's, you know, not a rubber stamped option, but definitely a decent one. So let's wrap up with the last segment for the week. And as we do each week, wrap up with a captain's corner. This week, Hibbard is playing sort of Saturday afternoon if you still have him. Darcy Cameron, if anyone has him, is playing Sunday afternoon, which is a fairly great option. Strindika, if you have him, is playing the last game of the round. So you have all options available to you. Brett Eddy's playing Saturday afternoon, and Barrett Sunday afternoon as well. So based on sort of a lot of the common outs at the moment, I would assume that the options are fairly varied and wide this week. So you can cast your net out of somewhere as wide as you'd like. Who do you think you're going to go with? Sticking with Dangerfield as a C or VC option? Or, I mean, his last 3 weeks have been really quite poor. It does seem like that knock could have thrown him up a little bit. I'm tempted to sort of keep it off him.
Yeah, obviously everyone's feeling the pain from last week. I just think that 3 weeks seems like it should be long enough that he might get over it. And Danger is such a competitive driven person that you would think he'd probably respond this week. So look, there's a really good chance that I would probably have the vice captain on Danger and then the captain on Rocky or Fife. Both terrible last week, but I think Fife at home against the Bombers is probably a decent pick. If I had Pendles against Carlton, I'd probably strongly consider him as a vice captain too.
I think I do like what you say about sort of champions not being down for too long. And in fact, we have noticed in the captain's corner in rounds past that after a particularly poor week, sometimes it can make for, you know, an even better bet the next week. So after hearing that, I think I don't mind that as well. I don't know if I'm going to go with Rockcliffe against Sydney away, but I will be tempted by Fife at home against Essendon. Mitchell is potentially sort of a safety backup because he's been ultra consistent so far, so depending on how the rest of the scoring goes, he might be a backup. But Dangerfield into Fife seems fairly tempting for mine. Selwood's the other one, potentially ahead of Dangerfield, just because he's copped a bit of shit in the media this week for having a bad tantrum, and he was tagged out by Greenwood. Like, he'll also be driven to prove a point, I think.
Agreed. If Dangerfield does not work out, then all the hate tweets can be sent to me via Marcus. But if he does do well, at FB Donkey.
All right, brilliant, Mark. I think that's enough of a chat this week. Thanks for joining us this week. I know you were a little bit down about the team, but hopefully things turn around for us both, mate. It was a tough week for us both, and we're smiling pretty happy next week. So all the best to our community this round. Don't forget patreon.com/supercoachcoach if you're looking to help us out. All right, we'll catch you all next week. See ya.
See ya.